Good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yeshua, our Messiah. The name of this broadcast is Cross the Border, and I'm Nicholas, and we're going through the scriptures here most of the times, day by day. We go through the Bible, book by book, chapter by chapter, and verse by verse, and we'll continue in that today. Last time we left off in Samuel, that is 1 Samuel, chapter 8, and we got a few verses in, but I'm going to back up to the beginning and read in chapter 8, verse 1, where it says, "And it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. His sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after lucre and took bribes and perverted judgment." And as I was sitting here meditating and reading the text before the broadcast, I took a look at what our good friend Henry had to say in his commentary, and I thought I would share that with you because, I just thought it was well worth sharing. Our good friend Matthew Henry says, "Two sad things we find here, but not strange things. One, a good and useful man growing old and unfit for service. Samuel was old and could not judge Israel as he had done. He is not reckoned to be past 60 years of age now, perhaps not so much, but he was a man, betimes, was full of thoughts and cared when he was a child, which perhaps hastened the infirmities of age upon him. The fruits that are the first ripe keep the worst. He had spent his strength and spirits in the fatigue of public business. And now, if he think to shake himself as at other times, he finds he is mistaken. Old age has cut his hair. Those that are in the prime of their time ought to be busy doing the work of life, for as they go into years, they will find themselves less disposed to it and less able for it. The children of a good man turning aside and not treading in his steps. Samuel had given his sons a good education and had given them such good hopes of their doing well and gained such reputation in Israel that he made them judges, assistants to him a while, and afterwards deputies under him at Beersheba, which lay remote from Ramah, probably the southern countries, petitioned for their residence there, that they might not be necessitated to travel far with their causes." And what we see here in this explanation, and I'll continue in a minute after I comment here, is we see the system of judges and the government that God gave Israel. God gave Israel a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And yes, that was proclaimed, I believe, by Wycliffe. And part of that phrase, part of his quote was borrowed by Abraham Lincoln. So a lot of people believe that Abraham Lincoln originated that, but no, it came hundreds of years before Abraham Lincoln. He merely borrowed that phrase, and it gave a lot of power to his speech, so much so that people were mesmerized and missed the true meaning of the double speak of that speech. But we won't go into that now. I talked about that the other day. But read it for yourself and look for doublespeak. You will find it. If you're not looking for it, if you just want to be mesmerized and worship at the altar of the apotheosis of a man, well, then join the crowds. But continuing here, we see the nation, the type of government that God gave the people in action here, a nation of judges. And the judges were to judge. And of course, like in Beersheba where he sent his sons, well, 10 families were supposed to judge among themselves, among 10 families and then among 50 families. And then from there it would go up to the highest judge in the land, which when the government was given was Abraham. At this time, it was Samuel. Now, we'll continue here with Henry. with that comment. We have reason to think that Samuel gave them their commission, not because they were his sons. He had no ambition to entail the government upon his family, any more than Gideon had, but because, for aught that yet appeared, they were men very fit for the trust, and none so proper to ease the aged judge, and take some of the burden off of him, as his own sons, who no doubt were respected for their good father's sake, and having such an advantage at setting out might soon have been great, if they had been good. But alas, his sons walked not in his ways. And when their character was the reverse of his, their relation to so good a man, which otherwise would have been their honor, was really their disgrace. It got something in Greek here, but it means a good extraction is a reproach to him that degenerates from it. Note that those that have the most grace themselves cannot give grace to their children. It has often been the grief of good men to see their posterity, instead of treading in their steps, trampling upon them, and, as Job speaks, marrying their path. Nay, many that have begun well, promised fair, and set out in the right path, so that their parents and friends have had great hopes of them, yet afterwards have turned aside to bypass and been the grief of those of whom they should have been the joy. When Samuel's sons were made judges and settled at a distance from him, then they discovered themselves. Thus, many that have been well educated and have conducted themselves well while they were under their parents' eye, when they have gone abroad into the world and set up for themselves, have proved bad. Let none, therefore, be secure either of themselves or theirs, but depend upon divine grace. Many that have done well in a state of meanness and subjection have been spoiled by preferment and power. Honors change men's mind, and too often for the worse. It does not appear that Samuel's sons were so profane and vicious as Eli's sons, but whatever they were in their respects, they were corrupt judges. They turned aside after lucre and after the mammon of unrighteousness, so the Chaldee reads it. Note, the love of money is the root of all evil. It is pernicious in any, but especially in judges. Samuel had taken no bribes, but his sons had, though no doubt he warned them against it when he made them judges. And then they perverted judgment. In determining controversies, they had an eye to the bribe, not to the law, and inquired who bid highest, not who had right on his side. It is sad with a people when the public justice that should do them right, being perverted, does them greatest wrong. And I thought I'd read that from our good friend Matthew Henry, an insight into perverted judges, which we see is endemic throughout the land where I live today. Justice is perverted at every turn, and men prefer perhaps not for money, but for many other things, or things that they will benefit by, if not a direct reward of a bribe. There are other ways to bribe than directly greasing someone's palms, so to speak. And so we see justice perverted throughout the land where we live. Let us continue here in 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 4. Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah. And here we have a turn for the worse. And another point that we need to understand here is that, yes, Samuel's sons perverted justice. They were taken in by the bribe. They preferred those that enriched them. And, you know, they did not have to take a direct bribe. Just as they didn't have a bidding call there to see who was going to bid the highest for the judge's answer. Things are not done that blatantly. There's always a modicum of respect that is visible when behind the scenes there may be secret deals or innuendo going on. You know that someone's not going to hand you $50,000 when you're making the judgment or to get you to pervert justice your way, although that does happen and that's unlawful and people get busted for those kind of things and judges and go to prison for that. No, but there are other ways to pervert justice. A wink, a knowing wink, many ways, knowing that you're going to benefit by the friendship that you have or you're going to make. And there are a lot of friendships behind the scenes when you go into the courtroom. Most of these judges and lawyers know each other. The one, if a judge has two lawyers in his courtroom and he loves the one but has no regard for the other or even an animosity toward the other, it doesn't matter what the case is. Justice will be perverted. And that's what you have going on. And that's why it's really a shame that for people to have a lawyer or an officer of the court. When you go into court, the guy that's representing you, if you're going up against the state, the guy that's representing you is an officer of the court, and his first duty is to the court, and the judge who sits on the bench is going to make the decision, or at least tell the jury what to do by his instruction, well, he is paid by your adversary, the state. And of course, then there's the prosecuting attorney, who is also paid for by the state. And then if you have a jury and you peruse the jury, you'll find that most of the jurors work for the state. They may be postmen, they may be teachers or government workers, but more than half of them will work for the state. And, or many of them have their living by benefits from the state. Some may even be on welfare or pension plans or collecting Social Security. So there's no way if you're a defendant in a courtroom today you're going to win. You lose no matter what. Even if you win your case, you still lose because you've had all the expense and the disruption of your life. Defendants never win. And so that's the state of justice. And let's see, what else do we have? I had another thought, and I guess I'm going to have to wait for it to drift back into my mind here. So all the elders, they gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah. And yes, the other side of that thought is, you have a people willing to pervert justice, to do favors, and to give bribes. It wasn't just Samuel's sons that were responsible for what came upon Israel. It was the people of Israel willing to pervert these young men and to turn them aside from a good path. And hopefully they could have repented in their life. We've all done wrong. We've all perverted justice in some manner in our lives, it would seem, or at least I would think that we're all guilty of something. None of us are all in, and who's to say how many of us could stand up and how long would it take for us to pervert justice? What is the price that we would fall at? And would to God that none of us would be put to such a trial to find that place in us, if that place be. There's a quote, it says that every man has his price. And someone told that to me once. I was writing on another case. Every man has his price, and I said every man that can be bought has his price, because not all men can be bought. There are many good men out there, many men who have the Spirit of God upon them. Those are the ones who can't be bought. If the Spirit of God is not on you, well, then it's just a matter of what your price is. We'll continue now in Samuel here, and coming to a often quoted and very famous text in Israel, because we're coming upon the text that the point in national Israel where they threw off the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Both the people by perverting justice, offering bribes and favors, whatever innuendo or wink of the eye, they were perverting justice. And then the judges, of course, falling for that, finding their price, even being the sons of a very prominent and righteous man, the man Samuel. So they came, and they said to Samuel, and here they're blame shifting. They're shifting the blame off of themselves. They say, here's a fault we found, and therefore this is what we want. And they're trying to shift the blame to Samuel himself, or his sons, to Samuel because of his sons. And the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah and said unto him, behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. In verse 6, but the thing displeased Samuel. And when they said, give us a king to judge us, and Samuel prayed unto Yahuwah. And the Lord said unto Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. So, and God is not a man that he could lie. And that's what he was telling them was the truth. What he was telling Samuel was the truth, that the nation had rejected him. Finally, once and for all, and forever in Israel, God had been rejected as the king of Israel. So he tells Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say, according to the works which they have done, verse 8, since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee. Now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. And Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked of him a king. And he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. This is a manner of government without God. So we need to take a special note here. Note these characteristics of a government without God. If you will not have God as your king, if you will not have your creator as your king, here is what you are going to have. And this is what we have all around us. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen. And some shall run before his chariots. And he will appoint him captains over thousands, and captains over fifties, and will set them to ear his ground, and to reap his harvest, and to make his instruments of war, and instruments of his chariots. Now what had Israel up to this point? He said, you don't want me? Then you're going to have a king. You're going to have a government that's going to take your sons and daughters and make them servants. And they're going to have a standing army, captains of tens, fifties, and thousands. So you're going to have a standing army. You're going to make instruments of war. He's going to take whatever he wants because, well, he is the king after all. He says he'll take your daughters to be his confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. And he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. Yeah, eminent domain, God giveth, but the king taketh away, huh? So we should be real surprised when all of this is happening all around us today, under what guise, whatever guise it is happening. He will take a tenth of your seed, which reminds me in the state government that enforces its will on the people where I live today. Well, they raised the sales tax up to 10%. Yes. So whatever the price, you know that if you live here and buy it here, it's going to cost you 10% more. So internet, that's just pushing all the business to internet and out of state where you can get 10% off on everything instantly. So this makes a lot of sense. These governments haven't figured that out yet. He will take the tenth from your seed and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and to his servants. Say, you don't want to pay me? You don't want to tithe me? Well, you're going to tithe the government. But it's much worse than that today, isn't it? The taking the tenth by the government here was to be a bad thing. That was like a curse. They're probably going, oh, only a tenth? I mean, my, if the people today could get away with only paying a tenth, but they're just paying a tenth on the sales tax. While the government is taking, you know, up to 60%, 80% of everything in every way they can. We'll move on here in verse 15. And he will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and his servants. So the tenth was just to go to all the people that he's going to take from you and employ for him, because he has to pay them somehow. They don't produce nothing. He needs your production to provide for them. And he will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. And he will take the tenth of your sheep and you shall be his servants. What a big surprise. Do you feel like a servant of the government? Yes, if 80%, if they leave you less than 50% of what you make to live on, that's called your allowance, because you are the servant of the government. We'll be back in a few minutes.